I'd like to begin with one of the comments from the crew, the regular crew, about the format of this show. To Christian, one of the stalwarts, he says, "I love your format and you reading the article and saying the commentary. The only criticism I might have is that you sometimes say bad words like the F word, but other than that, I don't have any criticisms." So I want to start by saying I greatly appreciate your feedback, Christian. And I also commented, I said, teaching young people to swear properly is part of teaching them to defy authority. So as a college teacher, as a parent, as a YouTuber, my job is to teach you to swear properly so that you can get going with the revolution. The only reason older people try to keep younger people from swearing is to control them. When it comes right down to it, that's what's behind words like politeness, civility, and professionalism. If you're truly a kind person and you live by the mantra, do no harm, take no shit, then swearing is the least of your problems. Swearing, by its inherent nature, isn't exploitative. It's expressive. So if what you have to express isn't exploitative, if it doesn't harm anyone, then by all means, let it out. If parental figures, if authority figures, like in churches and in other institutions, like at school, are teaching you not to swear, they're not doing it to help you, and they're not doing it to help society. They're doing it to help control society. I concluded with, if you're not aware of how it all works, you will attempt to do the same thing to future generations, and you'll teach people younger than you not to swear, which would be sad. So the well-meaning liberals on your social media feed are probably really starting to bother you. They keep trying to scare you with Trump and the word fascism. We talked about fascism yesterday. Today we'll give you even more ammo against these well-meaning shitlibs. Top 12 Reasons Biden Is Not My Fault by David Swanson. This was published a few days ago on Dandelion Salad. When the Democratic Party decided it preferred Trump to Bernie and would rather nominate to run against Trump a more corporate-friendly candidate who was polling more weakly against Trump, there were, in theory, at least two choices. First, millions of people could have publicly announced that they would not vote for either rotten candidate, but only someone who stood for a Green New Deal, Medicare for all, public education through college, demilitarization, and massive taxation of corporations and billionaires, or at least one of those things. Either a candidate would have credibly changed, or a message would have been sent very loudly to all future candidates. I tried promoting this plan, and a relative handful of people mumbled their agreement. Apart from the Green Party doing its thing, and a new party being started, it's not really a new party, there was no more organizing around this than there was to reject the Supreme Court handing George W. Bush the crown. And while we're at it, to deny Amy Coney Barrett her Supreme Court appointment. I don't need to remind some of you listeners and viewers that I started this channel and first called it Bernie or Bust Television. So I also tried promoting this plan of scaring the comfy Dems into voting for Bernie instead of a corporate candidate in the primaries. Not only did the mainline Dems absolutely not want this to happen, the Wall Street Journal actually tried to sabotage Victor Tiffany, the founder of the Bernie or Bust movement, and me. So we know the oligarchs and their media flunkies don't want this to happen, but it was amazing to me how many leftist pundits also kind of soft-pedaled it or squashed it altogether. That proves to me that electoral leverage has real promise going forward. Now, this second option that David mentions is just purely bullshit, but we'll still read his article so you know where he's coming from. Second, people could vote for a lesser evil while organizing educational and activist campaigns to try to save the world from that evil. That just sounds stupid. There's a credible, though uncertain and muddy case that the lesser evil is Joe Biden. There's also a credible and certain and not muddy case that the lesser evil is not Joe Biden. That was me, if you couldn't tell. Thousands of people have enthusiastically screamed this case at me at the top of their lungs, he's got that part right, and accused me of racism, sexism, and working in the employ of the Russian government, even though my actual real-world employment includes working for an organization pushing just this approach. I've pushed just this approach because it's my second choice, and my first choice above has gone nowhere. So even though the rest of your article is quite good, I have to tell you, David, you're still a sellout if you push this approach. Then David says, I've also maintained honesty about the rottenness of both candidates, which has angered and confused many supporters of both who believe that part of supporting a candidate is lying about him. And that applies to Bernie supporters too. Now, when/if Biden loses or has the election stolen, I would like to point out just a few of the reasons that it's not my fault, or Russia's fault, or Ralph Nader's fault, or the Green Party's fault. Number one, there is no evidence that Russia has had any influence over the 2020 or 2016 U.S. election. But please do send me hundreds of angry, evidence-free denunciations of the supposed lunacy of saying so. I would much rather you blame me than Russia because I don't have any nuclear weapons. Number two, the Green Party got a teeny tiny bit of the vote and probably gained Biden as many votes in Maine and places that have ranked choice voting as it cost him elsewhere, and is the most likely party to challenge any of Trump's election-related crimes. Number three, I supported Bernie. Number four, I didn't advise campaigning on a promise to keep fracking. I didn't even pretend that campaign was a mistake driven by ignorance of polling rather than subservience to funders. Number five, I didn't declare the party c'est moi and run screaming from every popular position. Number six, I live in a non-swing state, which, as we've said, dear viewers and listeners, many times, shouldn't matter. Number seven, the notion that I decided the election through my failure to push scheme number two above aggressively enough is exposed by my utter inability to advance scheme number one. Now, this is me talking. I've been advancing scheme number one since 2015, and I haven't stopped. So, David, if you want to stop being a sellout, you should switch back to number one right now. Number eight, I didn't create the Electoral College. I'm trying to abolish it. Number nine, I don't run the corporate media outlets that bow before Trump. I'm trying to break them up and regulate them. Number 10, I didn't tolerate Trump's hateful instigation of violence and intimidation. I've been trying to get him impeached, removed, and prosecuted for it since before his first inauguration. But a certain political party preferred a bunch of dangerous lies about Russia and a Ukraine story that made their own guy look bad. Yeah, the beloved Democratic Party would never have allowed Trump to be actually impeached, because it would have implicated them. And it would have made their own guy look even worse. Number 11, I didn't lie about voting by mail, strip names off rolls, create long lines, or utilize unverifiable machines and scanners. That was your elected officials. Number 12, I didn't kneel down and let Trump put a George W. Bush election thief on the Supreme Court. I proposed impeaching Trump for a legitimate offense from the long list of indisputable public outrages and forcing the Senate to deal with it. Now, if you want to spend the next couple of weeks telling everyone for the 10 millionth time to vote for Biden, knock yourself out. I've had a job doing that for months, but let me offer three pieces of unsolicited and unwanted advice. Number one, bring back honesty as soon as possible. Every bit of bad news about your candidate is not false, is not created by Russia, and therefore in need of being ignored regardless of whether it's false, and is not an assertion of equivalence between your candidate and the other one. If you go into a Biden presidency believing your own BS about him, his presidency will turn out as putrid and disastrous as Clinton's or Obama's and lead straight to one as openly fascist as Bush's or Trump's. That was a good point, David. Number two, bring back understanding of activism as soon as possible. Restore remembrance of the nonviolent activist campaigns that created the right to vote, rights for various groups, fair treatment and humane policies, and peace. Voting is an important tiny bit of civic duty that alone will never change the world. We should also mention that the property damage in the 1968 civil rights riots are why we got the Civil Rights Act. The property damage is what really got the attention of the plutocrats and made them come to the table. And if the plutocrats hadn't been leveraged this way, they never would have allowed Johnson to even do anything with regard to the Civil Rights Act. Because yes, President Johnson was owned by the same oligarchs and the deep state as our current politicians are. Number three, dear viewers and listeners, I've set up with my opening discussion with Christian. Number three is bring back politeness and respect as soon as possible. I have to say, David, personally, I would rather have truth than either politeness or respect. Respect should be given where it's deserved, but not otherwise. And the shitlibs don't deserve it. The comfy neo-lib suburbanites don't deserve it. And when the revolution happens, it will happen partly against them. And while I'm stopped, David, I have to say you should take this last sentence out and shoot it, but I'll try to read it in a way that means something. Stop all the screaming and denunciations and baseless accusations and xenophobic Cold Warism so you can work with people to do the things actually needed to turn the US government into what it's nice, but dangerous to imagine voting for one lousy candidate over another will do. David Swanson is an author, activist, journalist, and radio host. He is director of worldbeyondwar.org and campaign coordinator for rootsaction.org. Swanson's books include Leaving World War II Behind, 2020, Curing Exceptionalism, What's Wrong with How We Think About the United States, What Can We Do About It, 2018, and War is a Lie. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. He hosts Talk Nation Radio. He is a 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019 Nobel Peace Prize nominee. Support David's work. I'll support David's work if he goes back to option number one and gives up on option number two altogether. My fondest hope, dear viewers and listeners, is that you will take my work and shove it in the faces of the people who keep caving in like this. At the end of the day, people like David function as controlled opposition, whether they intend to or not. The people that are most trusted on the supposed left, like Cenk Uygur or Rachel Maddow, are the worst people when it comes right down to it because they do the most harm. The supposed leaders of the revolution are the ones that temper its convictions the most. I get more pushback from criticizing them than for criticizing Donald Trump. And yet, in the big picture, they do more harm than does Donald Trump. We need to find at least a niche, a side eddy in journalism that calls out anyone who is in any way supporting the idea that any of us can vote for and thus endorse corporatists. Keep those comments coming.